Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. And welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. I know here in the deep south, it is finally getting a little bit cooler. Feels kind of cold and dreary and rainy outside. Of course, it doesn't match the cold that so many other states are having. We're only in the 50s and 60s, I guess, and I'm complaining about being cold. So it's really relative to your area and what you've had over the summer or the fall. It's been hot as blazes here all summer, so it's a pleasure to have some cooler air. I don't know about you, but I have noticed in my own life the past 2 weeks, several people who have had their mothers or fathers pass away, and it has been a challenge to so many people because every single person has dealt with that differently. Today we're going to be speaking about grief and what happens after death of a loved one or a special pet in your life. And it's really important to talk about that because everybody doesn't want to talk about it. I don't want to go there. I don't want to know anything about it. That's really kind of not my area. I don't want to bring those words into my paradigm. I shouldn't be thinking about that. Let's keep denying and denying that it's going to happen. And we all know it's going to happen. We don't have to have it in everyday conversation. But, you know, to just think about it maybe once or twice and then just let it go. That might be what will be helpful to you when it does occur. Because when it does, it is such a shock. And if you haven't had any discussion with yourself, your family, or your loved ones, it will be hard to deal with. I know several of my friends, some were prepared, some were not prepared. Some knew it was inevitable. Some had spoken about it a lot before with family and friends. But when it came right down to the event, all of those plans, all of that conversation just went totally haywire. And really, all of the people got in such an uproar. And we think, what does grief and pain and suffering really do to us? Because it will take our mind to a place where we're just very uncomfortable in being. And yes, it's uncomfortable, but if we don't look at it, we may be able to make some choices that might not be in our best interest or in the best interest of the other people. I've known in the past of people that have had these sudden grief and they stop talking to everybody. When you stop talking to everybody, you're saying you're in a spot, but you're not honoring the other people too, because the other people too are going through it also. So today we're going to be speaking with Cynthia McGregor. She's the author of over 100 published books. My goodness, she's so lucky, I can't even get one off of my page. So she will be telling us about all of the books that she has, how she got started, but mostly about these two books, about grief. It's called Good Grief, and it is about what you can do, what is happening, what's the process that you go through, because you have to help yourself feel better after a death. You can't just say, smack, I hit the wall, and then there's not you anymore either. You have to know what to do next. What do you do the next day? What do you do the next hour? Who do you honor? How do you do this? So she will be going through that in her book today. So I'd like to welcome to the show Cynthia. Ms. McGregor, are you with us?
Yes, I am, and I hear you about the cooler weather. I'm speaking to you from South Florida. And we're having cooler weather than we had been. Now, for us, cooler weather doesn't mean icicles or snow, but it's down in the 70s today as opposed to the 80s, and it's windy, and it feels cool, which is, I guess, a good kind of weather to have when you're talking about grief. And yes, Jeanette, I do have two books on grief. Good Grief deals with coping with the death of a loved one, a friend, a relative, a spouse, a significant other, a parent, a child, a sibling, a dear friend, whoever. And Lost Your Best Friend is about dealing with the death of a beloved pet, because after all, pets are members of the family. And this is something that people who don't have pets don't understand, or some of them don't. And they say, well, it was just an animal. It wasn't just an animal. There's no such thing as just an animal. The pet is a member of the family. It's a four-legged member of the family, but it's a member of the family nonetheless. And it wasn't just an animal. It was a furry person whom you loved very much. So these two books deal with grief and coping with death. But one deals with the death of a two-legged person, and one deals with the death of a four-legged person. Thank you for having me on the show this morning, Jeanette.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you with us. As we've said, as I've said in the beginning, I've had so many friends recently experience this, and every single person was so different in how they went through that process. And things that they thought would be okay ended up not being okay. So when we think of, you know, that event, in other words, the phone call or the event when someone passes on, or, you know, it just experiencing it and being there in person, it is just such a shock to the system. Like what I always say is, you've hit the wall and you turn to ashes yourself, because you don't know yourself anymore. You don't know what to do, how to function. You're just frozen. So I think more grief is coming out of that. I need to find another way to move forward, correct?
Well, first of all, before you even try to move forward, you need to express the grief. Some people, well, for instance, and I'll come back to pet death with this one, mm-hmm. but it's true of people death also. When a child has lost a family dog or cat, and somebody says, don't cry, well, that's the wrong approach. We all need to cry. We all need to get it out of our systems, whether we've lost our husband or wife or significant other, or our father, mother, son, daughter, brother, sister, whoever, or pet. We need to get it out of our systems. And people sometimes will say, cheer up, or don't feel so bad, or don't cry. That's a wrong approach, Jeanette. You need to cry. You need to get it out of your system. And if you can't cry, you need to help yourself cry. I have always recommended renting a tearjerker movie, or going to see a tearjerker movie. But I say renting one, because if you're looking to induce tears, you may be uncomfortable sitting in a movie theater and bawling like a baby. So it's probably better to rent a movie and sit at home where you can cry your eyes out and not feel self-conscious that anyone is watching you and wondering, gee, why is he crying? It's just a movie. Well, the answer is, it's not just the movie that you're crying about. You're crying about your recent loss of your friend, relative, or whoever. And it's not just the movie you're crying over, but the movie is cathartic. The movie induces tears, and you can get the tears out of your system. On the other hand, of course, there are some people who just can't stop crying. They have the opposite problem. And in that case, I recommend renting a funny movie, a light comedy or something, and doing something to cheer yourself up, because if you're crying and crying and crying and crying and crying, then eventually you need to stop, because you've gotten it out of your system and now it's time to start moving past the initial grief. And so read a funny book or rent a funny movie or do something else that's funny and fun. And you know, some people feel guilty at having fun. My husband just died. I shouldn't be having a good time. Nonsense. Your husband, if he were still here, wouldn't want to see you eternally awash in grief. There is a time to live and a time to die, and there is a time to mourn and a time to be happy again. And the fact that you do something fun and enjoyable doesn't disrespect your memory of your beloved person who you lost. It just means that you're going on living. It doesn't mean you miss them any the less or love them any the less or feel any less sorrow. But there's a time to cry and a time to get over it. And you'll cry again. It's not like a week later you're over the sorrow and now that you're laughing you'll never cry again. You'll cry again. You'll cry again when something reminds you of the person you lost. You'll cry again in a sad moment when you're feeling alone. You'll cry again under any number of circumstances, but intermittent with that, you'll also have times of enjoying life. You're going on living. You're not dead. You're still living, and you're entitled to a little happiness.
You know, I sometimes when people I have noticed in the past would say things like, don't cry, it's because they themselves somewhere in their life had been told that. So that is one of their beliefs that they may have upheld. But also, it may be that they feel that being around that weakness might make them look weak if they did it. So it's sometimes it's just what they believe in for themselves that they're projecting on you. And it doesn't have to mean that that's what you do.
That's true. And there are other reasons why people don't want to see you sad. One of them is that grief reminds us all of our own mortality. When we see an obituary in the newspaper or when someone we know or someone we know knows dies, it reminds us that we all have a finite time here on Earth, and none of us looks forward to the day our time is over. Some of us who enjoy life especially, as I do, are even more eager to go on living for as long as possible, but even unhappy people with sad lives aren't eager to see their lives come to an end. And death reminds us of our own mortality.
You know, it's interesting. I read a post someone had put on Facebook the other day, and this person said that life was about, well, I just two or three words out of it that were important was that we experience grief, and after a loss, we have to find a reason to live. And I thought about that, and I said, well, that doesn't really sound right. Because to live is not just, you know, it just, something just didn't sound right. I mean, you get up and you live every day. You want to live your life. But to want to live, it was almost like this person was saying that someone had died in their life and they've been carrying this grief forever and never lived their own life. And that's what you and I are both saying, is that that really might not be the best choice for most people, correct?
The point is that people just don't come face to face with their own mortality every day. But when someone dies, it reminds us, gee, I'm going to die sometime soon too, or maybe sometime later, mm-hmm. but eventually I'm going to die too. Especially when we're young, Jeanette, we don't think in terms of death so much. Teenagers think they're invincible. They're never going to die.
Right.
And even people in their 20s who recognize that their death is a reality still think, well, it's not going to come for me for another 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 years. I don't have to worry about death yet. I remember, Jeanette, when I was in my early 20s and a friend of mine died, it was a shock. Not because she was a close friend and I was upset at her death, so much as because in my 20s I didn't think it could happen to me, and yet it happened to Eva. Eva had died, and Eva was in her 20s, and if Eva could die in her 20s, I could die in my 20s. I knew it wasn't likely, but it wasn't likely that Eva was going to die either. And yet she did. She got appendicitis and died of peritonitis in the hospital. And it was a wake-up call.
And these things happen when you least expect it, because death is not something we expect. You know, in other words, it doesn't have an expiration date. It hasn't forewarned us the date and time. It just is. And I think the randomness of it might be, some people tend to live in fear of that randomness. It's sort of like there's a ghost that's always following them around with baggage. People don't put a lid on that event and move forward. I know some people that have had a death of a child when they were very young. The parents were in their teens, and their baby died, and they never put a gravestone on the grave, and never put a tombstone on the grave. So they never kind of marked that child even existing. Yet they carried that pain and suffering throughout their entire life. They were always angry, and they were in their 80s, and they're still carrying it. So could you give us a few tips on that about, you know, working to really feel that, to be able to say, you
well,
know,
there are tips in my book, Good Grief. And by the way, for anyone listening who would like to buy a copy of Good Grief or a copy of Lost Your Best Friend, they are both e-books, which means they're not printed. They're for reading on e-readers or on your computer. If you don't have a Kindle or a Nook or something of that sort, or an iPad, you can read it on your computer in PDF form. And they are both available from Amazon.com, and they are both available from the publisher's websites as well. The publisher of Good Grief is XOXO. And the publisher of Lost Your Best Friend is Synergy Books, and they spell that SYNERGEBOOKS, Synergy Books. Or you can go to my website, which is www.CynthiaMacGregor.com, and that's MacGregor, not Nick. It's M-A-C, it's CYNTHIAMACGREGOR. I don't sell the books myself, but there are hyperlinks to, I think, Amazon. Honestly, I'm not my own webmaster, so I'm not sure how it's set up, but I think it links to Amazon. But there are links on my website, and you can go to my website and learn about all my books. I have over 100 of them, And these, as I say, are ebooks, and you can order them. You can find them on Amazon.com. You can look them up by title or by my name, which again is Cynthia MacGregor, MacGregor. And I hope you'll buy copies of my book. And the books do deal with ways to get your grief out and ways to handle it when you're feeling it appropriately. There are things you can do to mitigate your grief and alleviate your depression. You can memorialize your loved one. You can even hold a service. One of the suggestions in Good Grief is that if the person who died, if you weren't able to attend the funeral or memorial service, or if there was none held, and sometimes there isn't, or sometimes you have to not, you're not able to attend, either it was held in a different city and you can't fly there for the funeral, or sometimes it was held at a time when you're working in a crucial job and you can't get time off to attend the service. There are many valid reasons why you may not have been able to attend a funeral service, or there may not have been one. And you can have a service in your own home. You can have your own memorial service for this person who died, whom you miss. And you can invite just a couple of other people if you want, or as many as you want to invite. And it doesn't have to be a formal service in the vein of a true religious funeral. It can be anything you want it to be. It can be just people sitting around and sharing their memories of the departed person. It can be Bible readings if you're religious. It can be readings from secular books or magazines that are applicable to the person who died. It can be, there are a number of things it can be. As you wish, there are other ways to memorialize someone who died. If the person who died was active in a charity, you can carry on their work for them and keep their good work going in their name by volunteering for the charity that they worked for or the cause that they worked for, or if it was political rather than charitable, or something like saving the planet or something like that. You can work in the cause that they espoused and keep their good work going. You can memorialize them by talking about them to people. You can memorialize them by compiling a scrapbook or memory book. There are many things you can do to help keep their spirit alive. And there's a passage from the Jewish tradition, the religious service, that says, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't remember the exact words, but it's only the body is dead, the memory lives on in the heart, the soul lives on in the hearts and minds of those who cherish their memory. And that's a good way to look at it, that the person lives on through you. You keep them alive through talking about them, through what you do in their name, like doing charitable work for a charity that they cared about. You keep them alive through compiling a photo album or scrapbook or memory book. You keep them alive in your heart by just remembering them and sitting and thinking and quietly contemplating, and it may make you sad, it may make you happy. remembering the person as they were, who they were, what they were to you, the happy times you had with them. Oh, and one other thing on a slightly different topic, but if you have advanced knowledge that the person is going to die, if, for instance, they are suffering from a terminal illness or something of that sort, be sure to tell them what they mean to you while they're still alive so that you don't have regrets after they pass, after they're gone, and you say, gee, I never told him how much he meant to me, or gee, I never told her how important she was in my life, or, oh, she's gone now and she doesn't know how much I loved her. So get those words out. Don't be ashamed or embarrassed to say it. Say it. Say it to their face while they're still on this earth to hear it. Say, I hope you know how much you've always meant to me, or I hope you know how much I've always admired you, or I hope you know how important you are to me. Say it to them. Even if they're unconscious, say it to them, because the hearing is the last to go. And even though they're not conscious, they may still hear you. And then here's another thought. There are some people who talk to their loved ones after they've died. They believe that the loved ones are looking down from heaven and watching over them. Now, not everyone believes in heaven, and not everyone believes that the loved ones are watching what's on earth, even if they are in heaven. But what have you got to lose, Jeanette, if you want to talk to your loved person who has departed this earth? Just as you pray to God, you can pray to your departed loved one. Maybe they won't hear you, but maybe they will. What have you got to lose to try? Say a little prayer to your departed loved one. People do that all the time. It's not crazy.
I think people hold so much in their whole life. They just let time pass, and they're so busy with getting things or people or places or stature in life, and they think that's what their life is. But as we come to the end of our life, we look and we say, not one bit of that really matters. It was just the way that my life progressed, but my life really is just the people in it. And how hard is that for different generations to be able to recognize or even think about something like that? I know nowadays it seems a whole lot more teenagers or young adults have gone to college and they've tried to make it on their own and then they come back home. So there's a little bit more of a tendency now to not, and they're not doing it really as relying on their parents. They're doing it because they really are comforted by being a family, by being connected again. I think more in the 80s and 90s, kids were, if you're 18, there's the door, see you later, and you're never coming back. So we've kind of maybe turned a corner where we're starting to bring those kids back in and say, let's be a family again. But then we still have not turned the corner yet, which I'm seeing more of, is that once the elders hit 70, 75, it's, where's your next assisted living or nursing home going to be, because it's not going to be at my house? And how that's so unfortunate, because, you know, bringing in your elders is really just as important as bringing in your young adults, you know, bringing the family back in, because that's all that matters. There really is nothing else that matters. And how generations are evolving all the time. You know, the different age groups are realizing these different things. Now we have all the baby boomers being, what, 60s or so now? And they're like, well, what am I going to do? Well, if you look at a lot of these elder homes, that's not the place you want to be. You want to be kept back with your family. But instead, these baby boomers are running saying, I'm going to live forever. I'm going to fortify my body. That's not going to happen to me. And they might be running in a little bit of, you know, denying of the situation. So I guess there's a whole lot of mechanics going on. You know, we really want the people to come back in so that we can feel, not waiting to the last minute to say, oh, I love you, or I care about you, or I'm so happy to be with you. We're trying to do it more on a day-to-day basis with the young adults or the elders that we're bringing back in.
Yes, 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 you're right. You're right. You're right.
So have you found a lot of change? Are you seeing the changes like I am that, you know, the young adults are coming back in, but we really wish the elders would come back in?
Well, I'm part of the elders generation myself, Jeanette. I'm 70, and I'm of course still happily living, you know, on my own with my significant other. And I had a recent health situation. I broke an ankle, and I broke both bones of my ankle and three bones of my foot, and I was flat on my back for 8 weeks. And if I hadn't had my significant other to take care of me, I would have had to have gone into a facility.
Right.
And it was a very sobering time because it brought home to me the fact that at some point I may reach the age where I'm not able to take care of myself anymore. And I don't think my daughter can take me in. And she has her own issues. And not every adult child is able to take in elder parents. Sometimes it isn't feasible.
I think sometimes they're trying to change. I had another friend who took care of his father with Alzheimer's for, I think it was 4 years. And then when his father passed away, his mother then developed Alzheimer's, and he took care of her for 7 years in the house by himself. And while that, of course, that's not what everybody can do, but it is something to recognize, you know. You don't wait till the last minute and you do what you can. And, you know, like you said, just build your memories as you're going through life, because you just don't know when any of these events will take place.
Yes, yes. You never know when death is coming. As I said, when I was in my 20s, and my friend Eva died, and you know, the idea that someone in her 20s would die. And I remember in high school there was a girl who developed cancer and died. And that was very sobering, too. We never know when death is coming for us or for our loved ones. And we have to make every minute count. It's also a good reason to not forget to say, I love you, I care about you, you're important to me. Say it to people while they're around to hear it. My grandmother had an expression, give people their flowers while they're still around to enjoy them. Now, what she meant by that, when she said flowers, she was referring to the flowers that you see at funerals, flowers that people send to memorialize the dead. And when she said, give people their flowers while they're still around to enjoy them, she didn't literally mean flowers. She meant words. She meant tell people that you love them. Tell people that they're important to you. Tell people that you think they're great. Tell people that you think they're wonderful examples. Whatever compliments, whatever words of praise you feel about someone, tell them to their face, tell them now. You don't know, you know, we think to ourselves, oh, she knows I love her, or, you know, my mother knows how much I think about her, how much I think of her, how highly I esteem her. Probably she does, but damn it, tell her. Don't just assume that she knows. Tell her. You never know when you're not going to get the chance. You never know when the opportunity will have gone and it's too late. You never know when it's over and you can no longer say, hey, Mom, you're the greatest. So say it now. Say it while you can. Don't wait till the eulogy. Don't wait till you're standing up there in the pulpit and saying, I'm talking about my mother to you today now that she's no longer here to hear these words. Damn it, say the words while they're still alive. And not just people that you love immediately, mm-hmm. like family, friends. People whom you esteem, a favorite teacher, a favorite neighbor, anybody who's important, anybody who's influenced you, anybody, you know, there are so many possibilities of people who you want to tell what you think of them, how you feel about them. Say it while you can. Say it while they're alive. Take the chance. Say the words. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be ashamed. Don't feel that you're going to look like a wuss because you're saying, I think you're great. Full feathers.
Mm-hmm.
Just say the words.
And it does make a huge difference. I know when my father had a heart attack, I was there the next day, and he says, what are you doing here? He says, I'm not dead yet. And it was like, wow, you know, you're telling me what your thoughts or beliefs are on it, that people will just come when you're dead. And I'm telling you mine is that I would rather come when you're alive, you know. And it was such a step back. He just went, oh, okay. So can we talk a little bit about, we have about 20 minutes left, we talk a little bit about afterwards, about letting go of any depression around a loss of a loved one or a pet, and how to continue to pick yourself up and keep going, because a lot of people say, well, I just lost, and you say, well, how long is lost, and you know, how long do you want to keep going into that? You know, when is it time to start to be able to be happy again?
There's no hard and fast rule, Jeanette. Some people get over it quicker than others. Some people bounce back from all of life's adversities quicker than others do. And there's no hard and fast rule that you should feel better after 3 weeks, you should feel better after 3 months, you should feel better after 6 months, you should feel better after 1 week. I mean, there's no hard and fast time frame, but if you are still dragging any burden of sorrow or guilt, and there are lots of reasons why people feel guilt in the wake of a death. Guilt over not having told a person that you love, pardon me, that you loved them while they were around to hear it. Guilt over not having done more for them while they were alive. Guilt over not having taken better care of them with a pet. Or with a child, guilt over not having realized that they were suffering, that they were ill, that something was wrong, guilt over not taking them to the doctors or the vet in the case of a pet sooner. There are many reasons why we feel guilty, guilt that we didn't spend more time with them in their last hours or their last days or their last months. Guilt does not produce anything positive. The only positive thing we can get out of guilt is a resolve not to make the same mistake again. But then once we've resolved that, give it up and go on. Go on to better things, happier things, and again, I'm not saying, oh, forget about the person who died. You're alive. This is a new year, a new month, a new week. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying there's a time to live and a time to die and a time to mourn and a time to get over mourning. And we need to be alive and to remember that we're living beings and to get on with our lives while remembering the person who died. And there are many things you can do to get, you can start a new project, getting something new going on in your life is a great way to have a new beginning. It doesn't replace the person who died any more than getting a new pet replaces the pet who died. And that's a mistake. Let me diverge onto that for a minute. When a child loses a pet, parents sometimes make the mistake of saying, "Don't cry, I'll get you a new puppy." Now, there are several things wrong with that statement. First of all, don't cry. Wrong. Let the child cry. The child has lost somebody he or she loved. A four-legged somebody, yes, but somebody he or she loved. Let him or her cry. Don't say, don't cry. Cry it out. Comfort them. Don't say, don't cry. Now, also, don't say, don't cry, I'll get you a new puppy. What lesson are you teaching? That if somebody two-legged or four-legged leaves your life, you can always replace them with another one? If it was a parent who had died, would you say, don't cry, I'll get you a new mommy? Now, I mean, obviously, at some point, if you're the father and your wife has died, you might at some point in the future remarry and give the child a new stepmom, but that's not the same thing as replacing the mom who died. And by the same token, if it's a pet that died, the new pet doesn't replace the pet that died. It's a new pet, but it doesn't replace the pet that died. It's a new pet. It's somebody new to love and to give your attention to, but it's not a replacement. Don't cry, we'll get you a new puppy. Was the dog's life so throwaway that the dog can be replaced instantly by a new puppy? I think not.
And I think sometimes people run after an event of a loss of a pet or a loved one, and they run to find somebody else or another pet because they feel that they will take away that grief for them, that they don't want to feel those bad feelings. They don't want to have a hurt, and they always want to feel how they used to always feel. And in a way, that's almost like a transference of their feelings from the old or the other pet or the other loved one to a new one. And that sometimes really is not fair in the long run.
Well, it's not, the whole idea of replacement is not a good one. You can miss your old dog and love your new dog, but the new dog is not replacing the old dog.
Right.
Just
and
like
it's,
a new, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it's people are tending to do that because that they don't like that inner talk in them or that inner not good feeling.
Well, it's the same thing with a friend. If a friend dies, you might make a new friend, but that new friend doesn't replace the friend who died. It's a new friend, but it's not a replacement.
Right. So let's also talk, we have just a few minutes left, that it is important that you realize it's important to be happy again, because if you tend to continue in a path where you're not as happy as you used to be, then you're more or less saying that person or that pet has taken part of your life, when really that's unfair. In a way, to let that part of your life just go and not be able to live again and to be happy, that it is important to be happy again.
We're all entitled to happiness, Jeanette. We're all entitled to happiness. And nobody should It's normal and natural and fine to feel sad at first in the wake of a loss, a death of a pet, a death of a friend, a death of a parent, a death of a child, a death of a sibling, a death of a spouse. Of course you're going to feel sad, but not forever. There is a time to start living again, and that does not mean that you are disrespecting the memory of the person who died. My mother died 8 years ago. I miss her to this day. I love her to this day. I am very sorry that I didn't have more opportunity to spend more time with her in her final illness. She didn't feel up to having people over, even immediate family, and she told me not to come over, it would be a burden to her to have to be entertaining, and I said, you don't have to be entertaining either, but she still felt that it was easier on her to not have me come over so often, and so I didn't see much of her in her final illness, by her choice, by her wishes. And I wish that I had, you know, but I honored her wishes and did what she did. Now, I still feel badly that I didn't see more of her. I still miss her. I still love her. But I go on living. I'm not sitting around the house mourning my mother 8 years later. I'm going on living, and I'm honoring her and her life the best ways I know how, one of which is by talking about her and telling people how wonderful she was. She was an extraordinary human being, and I tell people this. I honor her in my own way, but I'm not sitting here crying every day, missing my mother. There's a time to go on living.
And I also find that, too, as we're coming to the end of the show, what Cynthia and I have spoken about today is about grief and death and moving on in life, that life is a continuum, and this is important to remember, that these events will occur all along your life but continue to live. And it's what Cynthia and I both have said is very important to listen, is that you enjoy your life now. You celebrate the people now, today, now, right where you are, because when an event happens, then you just pick yourself up and you continue to go on the same pattern. You enjoy your life and you'll celebrate the people and you just pass through. You know, it's just really a continuum. It's not, you know, something happens, it stops you and it changes you forever and you're never the same. You can always tend to be the same because you will just get up again and enjoy life and love the people that are still with us. So, Cynthia, it was a pleasure to have you with us today. Would you like to add a little bit more in closing about death of a pet?
Thank you, Jeanette. It was a pleasure to be with you. I thank you for having me on the show, and I'd like to remind your listeners that, again, they can find out more about me, my books, and my other work at www.cynthiamacgregor.com. And again, MacGregor is M-A-C, not M-C, M-A-C. And you can find out more about me there. And you can buy my books on Amazon.com, Cynthia MacGregor. There's an Irish joke book that I didn't write that'll come up under my name. There's obviously another Cynthia MacGregor out there writing a couple of books. So there's a couple of books that come up under my name that aren't mine, which is why I recommend that people go to my website, because there you'll find only the real Cynthia MacGregor.
The power of the Internet, huh?
Yep.
That's true. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And yeah, I know it's very important in every generation that we really look at being able to notice the changes in life, you know, but be able to be present. Because when you're not present, so much more life happens.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. And have a great holiday.
And you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye. So if you'd like to find out more information about Cynthia McGregor, my guest today, her book is called Good Grief. It is available on Amazon.com. The links are on today's show page directly to her website, and you'll be able to find out more information. It is really important, and I highly encourage you, if an event happens, do go through the steps of having your grief process. Do go through the steps of recognizing it and others that are also having some issues around the event. But please do remember to live afterwards, because this is the only reason we're here, is to live in the first place and to be able to do it to the best of our ability. Thank you so much for being with us today, and until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a wonderful holiday weekend. Thank you.